back from the breakout sessions to the report back part of this session.
Thank you. So what do we do now?
So you ask each group to
report back. Yes. Let's hear what the group in the boardroom has to say.
Okay, so basically, and the conclusions were that within this group, there was relatively limited use of electronic reporting. And the main issue seems to be that people felt that the whole implementation wasn't really worth it, because you still have to do a lot of work on your own after that. So you might as well save yourself the time of programming databases. There were also sort of some technical issues in terms of people concerned about links blowing up or the models getting too big. To the extent that people use it, a lot of it is really used via external providers, the research aggregators, in particular Bloomberg, although there is some concern currently about data accuracy that we think could be addressed with better taxonomy and better XBRL databases. In Japan, we do have a precedent where there is relatively stringent regulation on the disclosures, and therefore it is actually somewhat more reliable than in other countries and is getting used more, and people seem to feel more comfortable with it. Basically, everybody felt that they should be doing a little more automation, almost everybody, than they are doing right now. And that was true for the dedicated analysts who literally just spend, you know, their time building between 1 and 5 models, as well as the PMs who actually look at loads and loads of different data. We did agree that there's really no substitute for interpreting the data, but it could be made easier to actually just get some of the basic information into spreadsheets. And it might just be a little bit too ambitious to try to squeeze all of the information into either one particular cell into the spreadsheet or making it totally comparable across companies. So basically anything that would already help us aggregate information to a higher level by clicking a button could potentially help us. I think the biggest concern that we really have is around the fuzziness of the data. It's just not a case of where you say, you know, for every question I have, there's one number, and I know exactly where to find that number and where that number means. So the question really is, what can we do to deal with that fuzziness? And there maybe, you know, we really should, on the technical side, explore the feasibility and look at not just what can be programmed into a standard database, where you then write formula to extract stuff, but also look into things like artificial intelligence and just general algorithms that are designed to deal with an element of fuzziness that can maybe even go back to you and ask specific questions. And then it was pointed out to us that we really need to be very vocal very soon if we really want this to gain any traction for our daily modeling and work. Does that accurately reflect and is that comprehensive?
All that in 55 minutes. Peter, what do you say?
Yes, we had an animated discussion. We didn't literally answer the questions that were asked, but we can look at question one. But the first question was, can structured electronic reporting work for principle-based reporting? And our vote there was yes. And then we went around the table and talked about people's experiences. And similar to what Marietta was pointing out, it's clear that different people use, if they already use this type of data, they use it differently. Some people use it on a more extensive basis. Other people said, well, I'm an equity analyst, my job is to really understand inside out what these companies do, so I will use this type of information to create a peer group comparison, etc., etc. And then we talked about what type of data was the easiest to extract in an easy fashion, and we ended up talking about footnote information, and that's really where some of these techniques provide a value add, because the income statement, the balance sheet, that's all very clear, but sometimes it's very hard to extract footnote information over a period of time, like going back 10 years, and one of the participants indicated that that was a very important value add aspect of this type of data gathering. We talked about the risks of the tags, standard tags, non-standard tags, that created challenges in ensuring, again, that you download comparable information. And I think that was for question one, more or less, what we talked about. We talked a lot about the risks of gathering data in this particular fashion. One participant pointed out that one of the risks of this is you lose yourself a little bit, in the sense that a lot of definitions get thrown at you, a lot of numbers get thrown at you, and it's not always clear that you're comparing apples to apples. That was one aspect. A second risk that was pointed out is the fact that you sometimes lose track of how you can reconcile the data that you get electronically and indeed the data that you find by reading a PDF. And so we pointed at the need to make sure that click-throughs exist, etc., so that we can always reconcile whatever we download electronically with whatever we would read if we did it the old-fashioned way and reading the PDF. We talked about the risk of template thinking, that's my word, but in the sense that if you start working with these standardized concepts, operating profit, etc., it looks all very easy. You can put together nice templates if you wish, but it turns out that what operating profit is for one firm is not the same for the other one, and that creates a real risk that you get misleading information. So that was an important one. We talked about the need to think beyond the actual data, meta thinking, if you wish. The real risk is that you cannot connect, for example, outside of the US, you cannot connect quarterly information with annual information. You have to be able to define period very clearly, etc., and that's sometimes lacking at this point in time. And then a final comment that was made related to some issues that there might be a lot of effort put into all of this project, and in the end, it's not clear. I mean, a number of conditions will have to be fulfilled for people to actually actively use this type of data. And some of the stuff that I said earlier points to the risks, like if definitions are not clear across companies, etc., we might actually spend a lot of time getting to a certain point, but it's just not far enough to allow people to really engage and start using this information actively. So that was, I hope that sort of captures the...
We talked about a lot of things in this group also. Someone want to add something? Yeah, Pablo. You have your sign raised.
Oh, sorry.
Actually, there was one question asked that
I had left it. Sorry.
That we didn't address, and it was like, is there a need, and I think it's an important question, is there a need to think differently about IS1 in the context of setting up these systems? And we didn't answer that question, but I thought it was an interesting one to think about, because there is a lot of flexibility in terms of how people can construct their financial statements, but it's clear that this calls for more structure in terms of data delivery. But does that mean that you have to rewrite the standard? And I think we didn't answer that question, so that's why.
We discussed.
We did have a session this afternoon on exactly that issue, where all right, looking at, well, in particular looking at operating profit and the different ways in which different companies.
Okay, so I think that's an important thing to address.
Pat.
So a question I posed to this group here before you just entered the room was whether or not the process that the ISB goes through to set accounting standards is fit for the purpose of providing a comprehensive and sound answer to question two. In other words, is what we are doing going to provide you with the structured electronic reporting that is going to be quote-unquote useful, is going to meet your needs? And as I said to the group here, we've had an internal debate about whether or not and what role the board should take in developing that structured electronic data as we set accounting standards. We had a trial run, a pilot, if you will, with the amendments to IS7, which you heard this morning. And we've had mixed views on that. But at the end of the day, if you're going to get what you want, it's ultimately going to be affected by the standard that's written. And as I said, even if you have an XBRL, well, or let's put it this way, an electronic data reporting world, where there's no errors, everybody uses the same taxonomy, there's no extensions, it's a perfect world from an extraction standpoint, it's only going to be as useful has the information that Sue Lloyd votes for, or Martin Edelman votes for, or Steve Cooper votes for.
God, that makes it sound dreadful.
And so the question is the process here fit for purpose? Are we drilling down and giving you the disaggregated, detailed information on the topics that you're interested in? So we're debating this internally, and there's a leaning in terms of which direction we should go. But in my opinion, at the end of the day, this is only going to be as good as it gets based on what you're seeing today, okay, unless some things change.
Just a question, I guess.
And my question for you is, do you want to weigh in and tell the board and the staff how you feel about this?
You're not the chair anymore.
Thank you
for that. I don't think you needed to tell us what you thought. We could possibly tell. But I wanted to follow up on something that Peter mentioned, but his comment on IS1, because to me I think that is quite a key point. And one thing I'm grappling with personally at the moment, and I don't know if it's a topic for today or just something to ask people to think about for another time, which is, I think as part of the disclosure initiative from the broader performance reporting type work that we are doing at the moment, we get often getting messages, maybe from preparers, about communication, and I think a general sort of sense, at least for many, that in order to communicate well and for IFRS financial statements not to be a compliance exercise, there needs to be more freedom around how things are presented and disclosed. And I do worry a little bit whether that's sort of at odds with some of the other desires for improved comparability, which, for example, I think came through in Goro's comments in our breakout session in terms of what's achieved in Japan, because it is much more prescriptive in terms of how things have to be presented and what the line items mean and represent. And I guess at some point, maybe the taxonomy helps us, because if you can tag things in a common way, you can have the best of both worlds, because you can present it one way, but then point back to something comparable. But how we should try and balance this sort of desire for more freedom to communicate versus comparability that investors often seem to be looking for.
I'd like to just put a footnote on that question. That is, are those two concepts reconcilable? Yeah. In other words, are they incompatible, mutually exclusive, or actually can you reconcile them? Yeah. I believe you can reconcile them, but that's fine.
More time?
Yeah, I think you cannot expect more from XBRL than you can expect from the financial statement as they are.
That's right.
So I think IFRS is leading, and to some extent XBRL will be following that's the correct order. I do think it's good to keep in mind that if a particular item you think of requiring to be disclosed is something that somehow hooks into anywhere from revenue to net income, that it's probably part of the addition. And that if you come up with, for example, requirements for a IFRS proof XBRL file, that a basic requirement should be that there's a full, that you, when you go up, go down from net income, from revenue to net income, that all the elements are complete. So there's nothing missing. It's clear whether it's a plus or a minus. For example, for minority interests, it's not always that clear. The same, so and you can pull in the notes as well if there's information not available in the face of the financial statement, but it is in the notes, that you make it part of the addition. So it is, at least when you get to the XBRL file, you know it is complete, else it wouldn't have been there. That kind of requirement you can make, but it will be following.
I just want to follow up on your comment, and that's essentially this. The reason why I think this is important is you take the IS7, okay? You can write a disclosure requirement that says, provide a reconciliation, full stop. That's a principle. You might call it a rule, but, or provide adequate disclosure, okay? consider using a reconciliation. That's a principle. Difference in a world of the board sitting down and actually designing a reconciliation, okay, in some comprehensive detail as an illustrative example, having my friend over here map it into, okay, the taxonomy, providing the tags, and actually illustrating that. And now that goes out into the marketplace. Those are two different worlds. Two different worlds, because now the analyst, maybe she's gonna pick up her book and say, wow, this is actually kind of neat. How come they don't provide this? You know? It's part of the principle, it was suggested, you know, unless it's actually required. So in order to kind of advance and push, you know, the quality of disclosure along, I think the board needs to do that. They need to push pen to paper. As my math teacher in high school used to tell me, if you're not writing, you're not thinking. Okay? So you can think about all kinds of wonderful principles, but unless you actually put pen to paper, you design them, and as I think Robert adequately or rightly said before, if you're going to live in an electronic world, you got to start pushing more and more of the standard setting process into that world, as opposed to just, you know, kind of writing these very ethereal concepts, you know, and saying, do good, spread the word, you know, provide comprehensive, adequate disclosure.
Robert?
Two.
Can you match that?
No. But I foolishly will speak anyway. There is a trend from, I'll start from ink and parchment. I think the first financial statements were issued with clay tablets. We've gone to paper, printed spreadsheets.
Were those principles or rules?
I'm sure. But,
evolution.
But there's a serious question about the first language may have actually been accounting. Sumerian text, if my history is right. But there is going to be a database. There's going to be a database of financial information. And it's almost from a strategic, the cheese will move to that. And you may not want to do it, the board may not want to do it now, but eventually, if you don't own that database, the red books will be irrelevant. And so it's really a question of not whether the ISB takes ownership of how that will be represented electronically, the way you've taken ownership of how it's represented on paper. If you don't go there, you will not be relevant. Now, you know, from a tactical point of view, you delegate it for a while and then eventually grab it, and that's easy, less resources, but you then run the risk that you may never get it back again. But you will. You need to own it someday.
Marietta?
I'm not worried at all about the loss of freedom. I think, you know, in fact, you know, I mean, the companies have a lot of freedom to show you information they want to show you, and what we need to make sure is that reporting doesn't become arbitrary. And I think we're already seeing developments with things like, you know, integrated reporting, where basically, I mean, this holistic freedom concept is being interpreted as, you know, just throwing lots of fluff at us and pretending that that's financial information. And what I would point out is that there are also a lot of factors outside of IFRS that actually limit the freedom that companies have to report something. So, for example, there's nothing in IFRS that says you need to show COGS, SG&A expenses, R&D, and other operating income. But a lot of companies do, and if they do, then they have to be somewhat reasonable as to what they call SG&A versus, for example, R&D. And this is even something that auditors end up looking at. And, you know, for example, we had a situation in pharma a number of years back where companies started reclassifying stuff from R&D to SG&A because they suddenly realized, oh, what we used to call R&D expenses, you know, we really just did it to hype the product a little bit. I think, you know, there's always the chance. So I think, you know, we need to make sure that the companies, you know, stick with the right category. And then they can still do all sorts of additional disclosures. So they can tell you in terms of R&D spend how much of it goes to each one of their core therapeutic areas. And they might have a totally different way of defining a core therapeutic area versus somebody else. They might, you know, mix respiratory and inflammation in one case and somebody else is just respiratory, whatever. And that's all fine. I think this is where the freedom comes in, but there shouldn't be freedom to obfuscate, basically.
That's how much you write down.
I'm actually in favor of freedom to obfuscate. I think what a lot of us are talking about is, like, in a perfect world, what would XBRL look like? But I think, having used it in the US pretty extensively, I think what you need to do first, tagging the footnotes and making it available to investors doesn't create any problems with accounting that don't currently exist. In other words, I don't think they're changing it's more of, the onus is more to me on overseeing, the regulators overseeing the tagging and the things like that, than it is on the accounting rule setters to change how they set rules to fit the XBRL. I think what XBRL does, for me at least, is it enables you to take the information as it exists now and just get it quicker. I think it actually makes the freedom of disclosure, makes XBRL even more important, because now that is exactly what the current data systems don't pull for you, is that those disclosures where there's where management is expressing, you know, their freedom. So, you know, you do have the tagging issue, but I said in the other meeting, I think every tag sort of has its roots somewhere. So I think you need to, even if it's you have the extension issue, even if it's an extension, as long as there's a way to tie it back to its root, which you currently can't do in the US, and I think is a mistake, I think it still works. I think that's the value of XBRL, is that it allows you to pull differentiated information that can't be standardized or is more difficult to standardize. It's just a way to get the information faster right now. Let's get to that first and then think about the next step, because it's a huge time saving if you can just get the information that we have right now under the accounting rules we have right now in a format that is easily pulled.
Yeah. I find myself, I said this earlier, and I want to say it again, I find myself really out of sympathy with a lot of the consensus around the table here. And I suppose that I want, because you mentioned it a couple of times, going back to IS1 and going back to fundamental principles here, financial reporting isn't only about the numbers, in my view. In fact, I think it is much more about the narrative. So the idea that you're going to create a set of spreadsheets that kind of dispense with the narrative seems to me that you've thrown away, in my opinion, maybe more 50% or more of the value of the financial report. And the more you move into the world where you're going to have databases, I think the more it's rubbish, frankly. You may as well forget trying to do an analysis and just be passive at that stage, because you've lost all the useful information. All the useful information. The financial numbers are not single data points about gospel truth. They are subject to some risk and some uncertainty about what those numbers really are. And what you get out of the narrative and the discussion and all that kind of stuff is some idea of where in the spectrum of the distribution of risk these numbers lie. So we know some sectors have very hard numbers. Utilities, generally speaking, have very hard numbers, very easy to understand. You can predict the earnings 2 or 3 years ahead in most areas very easily. And some sectors have numbers that move around quite a lot. And even when they publish them in 1 year, you know that you're not going to place such great reliance on those numbers without having some kind of narrative context around them. So where does that leave us? That leaves us with this problem, which is not a problem about what the work of the IASB is. It's in the inherent nature of the problem, which is that comparability requires judgment. And you cannot create that by creating a spreadsheet that creates comparable numbers, because they could just all be rubbish. And then you're going to spend all your life sitting there thinking, what do the numbers really mean? Because you won't have the narrative around that. And I think that's the danger that we will have in this exercise. I know what will happen is that some portfolio managers will simply dispense with the financials and go and talk to the management and just say, it's all kind of set up, it's spurious accuracy. It's all about all numbers in the spreadsheet, which show comparability according to taxonomy, etc. The business is not managing in this way in any shape or form, and the managers will just simply you know, we'll undermine that by saying, yeah, we did that because AISP asked us to do that, but actually we run our business this way. That's the danger.
I'm not on the same side as Glenn is, because I'm a huge fan of this electronic reporting, but I think it's one thing that we haven't really touched upon, and it's this entity-specific thing. I mean, if you have an annual report for a bank, you look at the balance sheet and you know it's a bank because you don't understand. You have a lot of lines and a large number, and there's nothing you can compare in a bank with an ordinary industrial company. So if you take this into an electronic context with tags and numbers and lines moving around in the computer, there's no way you can use the system if you mix banks with all the other companies. Now, having said that, I can also say that I think it's necessary to go in a direction with entity-specific kind of guidance or something when you dig into this electronic reporting. I mean, we have IS 40. It's a standard for a certain kind of companies, investment property companies. If you mix the revaluations from investment companies into the income statement, where do you do that in Volvo, for example? There's no such thing in Volvo. But there are huge revaluations in the 20 property companies that we have on the stock exchange. Having said that, I can move to IS 41, agriculture, biological assets, forest in Sweden. A couple of companies do revaluations constantly of forests. And then I can move over to construction companies. We don't have any insurance companies on the Stockholm Exchange, but I'm sure they also need extra guidance when we jump into this electronic world. As long as you have the annual report, it's so much easier to read the income statement, the balance sheet in an annual report, than if you try to find your way around in an electronic context. So I think electronic means that we also need to dig deeper into this entity-specific orientation or whatever I want to call it. I think it was... you are cutting off after... I think more time, and then Dan.
And then. Thanks. I really like Glenn's comments about the importance of the narrative. The thing is, many analysts are really spending lots of time doing stupid processing, copying numbers, getting the line items right. It's not high quality work. It needs to be done, and I do think there's a role for XBRL to facilitate this process. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you stop thinking. It actually helps you spend more time thinking. Mm-hmm. And applying judgment. So I think there's a very positive role to lower the cost of analysis if you facilitate this process. And just how many clients does FactSet and Bloomberg and Capital IQ have, and how much do they pay for the 140 line items that comprise for them the financial statements. They pay tens of thousands of euros a year per analyst, not FactSet, but the asset managers pay that, to get that information. That already shows the importance of electronic, of a useful form of electronic. I think XBRL has the potential of doing a better job than the effect sets of this world currently do.
That's
and
creep.
Why? Yeah. Because that's the granularity that IFRS can require is something that effect sets cannot impose on it. And so I think there's lots of there's one element I think that needs to that deserves attention as well. You can have the perfect XBRL file sitting on a website of a reporting, or sitting in a central European database or whatever database, but you need to lower somehow the barriers for actually using it need to be lowered, and it is not the responsibility of the ISB to develop software, but I do think there's a role for the foundation to somehow promote the development of software that's useful for analysts to use, or maybe make a price or whatever, or share, then you have gone through lengths of efforts to select appropriate software. Maybe you can elaborate on that, but I think an XBRL file is not enough. Analysts need to know how to use it and need to be a little bit more guidance on how to apply it in practice.
I think maybe because people haven't used it yet, I think a lot of people are seeing XBRL as a data source when it's actually more of a navigation tool. It actually, in my opinion, increases the narrative portion of your analysis, not decreases it, because you're not just tagging the numbers, you're tagging the text, the abstract. So if I'm reading this year's 10K and I want to say, what were they saying about their credit losses 2 years ago, I can click on the abstract within the XBRL filing and read that narrative. You know, it's kind of like you read these books on your iPad with your kids and you click on a thing and it pops up a new story. And you know, it's kind of like that. It's using the technology to quickly increase your knowledge about what's happened previously. It's not from us, it hasn't been a huge source of data. It's a way to navigate the financial statements and much more quickly. Because you're not just tagging numbers, you're tagging texts too. So you can see a disclosure very quickly over time.
And finally, Marietta.
Yeah, and I completely agree with what you said, Marta, and I think it really frees up time for the analyst to do actually a lot of the sort of really intellectual work after you've built the model, which is a requirement. But I think, Glenn, you touched on another very, very important issue, which is, I think, whenever we try to come up with something that complements what we already have, we need to really put in place safeguards to make sure that it doesn't actually supplant other things that are very valuable. And I mean, I could see that risk that, you know, in a number of years' time, you know, we might actually start throwing stuff out because we say, well, you know, everybody uses this electronic format and it doesn't really fit into that format, so we leave it out. I think it's a remote risk at the moment, but it needs monitoring. And I think that really goes for everything. That also goes for the integrated reporting, which at the moment is just a supplementary report. But, you know, at some point it could just, you know, get merged into one report, and then you could start thinking about actually putting all of these capitals onto the balance sheet, which at the moment is no-go. And I think there's generally a very, very dangerous trend towards a decrease in disclosure. So there are voices calling for an abolition of the interim management statements. There are even people calling for the abolition of live analyst calls where you can ask questions. And I think that would just be the wrong road to go down. So maybe there is a way to put safeguards in place to really make it very clear from the beginning that this is just a tool to extract data that's already there. It's not supposed to supplant everything.
My timekeeping record is getting disastrous. The trial has to suffer for that.
Yes, thank you very much.
So thank you everyone for the contribution. Someone has to suffer.